If you could alter a single moment in history, what would you choose to change? Would you change the outcome of a major event, like a battle or election, or change something smaller and let the butterfly effect slowly but progressively create a new future? For Ronald Moore, Matt Wolpert, and Ben Nadivi, the answer is the moon landing. Instead of astronaut Neil Armstrong taking the first steps on the moon in July 1969, cosmonaut Alexei Leonov lands on the moon in June, plants the flag of the Soviet Union, and gives a short speech about progressing the Marxist-Leninist way of life. For All Mankind invites the audience to imagine a world in which the Soviets continued their string of successes in the space race and what the ramifications would be on the Cold War and American political culture. Hi, I'm Shelby Riedel, and on episode 9 of Warming Up to the Cold War, we're diving into alternate history in Apple TV Plus's For All Mankind. All right, so to start our discussion today, we need to talk about what alternate history is. First, a bit of terminology. Why do we say alternate history when alternative history would be more grammatically correct? Well, alternative history already has a use and it is attached to a specific type of writing. Alternative history usually focuses on stories and people that have been marginalized from mainstream history, such as women and people of color. And Karen Heckelson talks about this on page 3 of her book, The Alternate History. Whereas the term alternate history indicates a different timeline but a shared world. So there's a shared past to some extent, and then there's this event that changes, and then it sets us off on a new timeline. But it's not completely science fiction or completely fiction where it takes us to a fantasy world or to a different location entirely. So Karen Heckelson argues that alternate history falls under the umbrella of science fiction because they have similar traits. She says, quote, "The alternate history as a genre speculates about such topics as the nature of time and linearity, the past linked to the present's linked to the future, and the role of individuals in the history-making process. Alternate histories question the nature of history and causality. They question accepted notions of time and space. They rupture linear movement, and they make readers rethink their world and how it has become what it is. They are a critique of the metaphors we use to discuss history, and they foreground the constructedness of history and the role narrative plays in this construction." Unquote. And that's from pages 4 and 5 of her book, The Alternate History. In her book, she really talks about the parallel worlds theory and the multi-worlds theory and the different types of alternate histories that play in that territory, as well as time travel and when people go back in time to fix or change an event and then what they come back to. So you can see definitely why she would lean more towards science fiction because those stories do have more of that technological element. They are playing with the idea of time, like how time plays out, and if it's always past, present, future, or if there's some reordering going on. On the other hand, Kathleen Singles, in her work, compares and contrasts history writing with historical fiction and then alternative history. So she makes the distinction between history and the past, because there's degrees of separation between a historian and an actual event. And she talks about this on pages 26 and 27 of her book, Alternate History. So the further away you are from an event, so if you have to rely on reading newspaper articles and diaries to understand an event, then you're one degree removed. But if you have to rely on other people's works and other people's assessments of what happened, then you're another degree separated. And so a historian isn't able to fully write about the past in an accurate way. So we call it a history. And also, people are natural storytellers. So then even historians will kind of look for a story, and if they're looking at a big event, then they'll take steps backwards and, like, okay, how did this event happen? And so then that story will be the development of how that event came to be. It's not just the past. They're adding something to it to make that narrative happen. So how Kathleen Singles distinguishes history writing from alternate histories is as follows. Quote, works of history writing, like non-fictional texts in general, are world-imagining texts, whereas alternate histories, as fiction, are world-constructing texts, unquote. And that is on page 43 of her book. She also says, quote, alternate histories must presuppose a version of history and or a notion of historiography, even if they do not necessarily narrate history or communicate the tenets of a given historiography. Alternate histories always construct implicitly or explicitly their own histories, because a certain version of history necessarily precedes any attempt to ask what if, unquote. And that was also from page 43. So writers of alternate histories need to have a strong understanding of the real history of their time period and region in order to write a compelling story. And then readers of alternate histories need to have a basic knowledge of the real history in order to notice and appreciate the discrepancies in the timeline. There's also greater appreciation for the links and relationships between events, people, and places, and I think that that's transferred to the audience that reads alternate histories. So for All Mankind, I was already interested in the space race. You can listen to episode 2 where I talk about Satellunes and my work with Sheldahl's collection. But For All Mankind made me question a lot of things and how they happened in the space race and encouraged me to go off and do my own research. And as Liz Shannon Miller says in her piece in The Vulture, quote, one of the best aspects of For All Mankind as an ongoing experience is how it blends the stark realism of period-accurate depictions of early space travel with the very real fact that because this is now an alternate history, veering well away from the established record of events, anything can happen. Unquote. So with that, we're going to move into the show proper. So For All Mankind is an Apple TV Plus original series. It started in 2019 and it is ongoing. The premise is, what if the space race never ended? So as I mentioned in the introduction, the point of divergence where the timeline splits is the moon landing. The Soviets beat the Americans to the moon by 1 month in the show. Most of the main characters are fictional, but they represent groups or types of people that really existed. And then the more notable historical figures play a secondary role. So for example, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin are seen passing by in the hallway. They'll make comments about them. We see their mission, but we're not with them on the mission like we are with the main characters. The Mercury 13 astronaut candidates are also represented. There are two women who completed that training that go on to be in the group of Nixon's women and do the training for that. There are a lot of flight controllers at Mission Control whose stories are explored more fully, and they are definitely part of the cast of characters. And then the families of astronauts also play a very large role in the show. Another unique device that's used in the show is deep fake phone calls. So it sounds like the real voices of people, but the conversations are all scripted and did not happen with the presidents. So it goes from Nixon and then there's Kennedy and Reagan. So it's very interesting to hear these voices talk about how upset they are about how NASA's handling things. And it's kind of unsettling because it makes you question, you know, how much of that is based in our reality and how much of that are they adding to create drama. So for this episode, I'll mainly be talking about season 1. I haven't watched season 2 yet. Each episode is about an hour long, so it is a big time investment if you are considering watching the show. But if you do have access to Apple TV Plus, I would encourage you to watch the show first. I'll dive into some spoilers about some of the events in the space race. So if you want to avoid any spoilers, then I'd encourage you to watch that first and then come back to this episode. All right. So first, I have a selective timeline of the real events of the space race. So in July 1969, the first man on the moon is astronaut Neil Armstrong. In 1969 and 1970, the Soviet space program launches Soyuz flights and space stations. In 1970, Ted Kennedy is charged with negligent and reckless behavior in the Chappaquiddick incident that resulted in the death of Mary Jo Kopechne, causing him to not run for president in 1972 and 1976. In 1973, NASA launches Skylab. In 1975, Soyuz 19 and Apollo rendezvous in space, and the astronauts and cosmonauts conducted experiments together. In 1975, the Vietnam War ends. In 1976, Jimmy Carter is elected the 39th president. The Republican vote was split between incumbent Gerald Ford and Ronald Reagan. In 1977, the U.S. cedes control of the Panama Canal to the Panamanian government. In 1980, John Lennon is assassinated. In 1981, the first space shuttle launched. Its name was Columbia. Billions of dollars of funding came from the Department of Defense. In 1982, the first Soviet woman test pilot, Svetlana Savitskaya, flew a mission. In 1983, the first American woman, Sally Ride, flew as a mission specialist. Also in 1983, Ronald Reagan calls the USSR an evil empire, and Cold War tensions reached their peak. In 1997, NASA's first rover, Sojourner, lands on Mars. And projected for 2024, the first woman will step on the moon. As Katherine Van Arendonk pointed out on Appointment Television episode 298, the only presence of women on the moon was a picture of a Playboy model that made it on the Apollo 12 mission in 1969. There have not been any women on the moon yet. And then in 2030, there's going to be a moon base built by the Gateway project of the Artemis program at NASA. Meanwhile, China and Russia are collaborating on their own moon base. And this is talked about in The Lunar Bases That Never Were, an episode of For All Mankind, the official podcast. So now that we've established a real timeline, I'll go over some of the major events in the alternate timeline. And I got these dates from the For All Mankind Wikipedia page. And then there is a video timeline called One Giant Leap, 1975 to 1982, on the Apple TV Plus page for All Mankind. You can find this series of videos. So in June 1969, the first man on the moon is cosmonaut Alexei Leonov. In July 1969, astronauts Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin crash land on the moon. In 1970, Wernher von Braun's involvement with the Nazi regime and the construction of V-2 rockets at a concentration camp is exposed in front of Congress. In 1970, the first woman on the moon is cosmonaut Anastasia Belikova. In 1972, astronaut Molly Cobb is the first American woman to walk on the moon, and she discovers ice in the Shackleton crater. In November 1972, Ted Kennedy is elected president, and the Vietnam War ends. In October 1973, Jamestown, a U.S. military base, is established on the moon. In 1974, the Equal Rights Amendment is ratified. In 1975, the manned spacecraft Hermes successfully lands on Mars, and rover Sojourner explores the Martian surface. In 1976, Ronald Reagan defeats Ted Kennedy and becomes the 39th POTUS. In 1977, the Sea Dragon launches to deliver supplies to the Jamestown colony. In 1978, Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind sweeps the Oscars, which demonstrates the impact of NASA on popular culture. In 1979, there's a fight between Panama and the U.S. over control of the Panama Canal, a crucial passageway for the Sea Dragon, which travels from Cape Kennedy to Guam for launch. In 1980, John Lennon survives an assassination attempt. In 1981, the military shuttle launches and orbits the Earth for a few days, gets a good visual of the Middle East, which is important because the Camp David talks failed. In 1982, there's a tense standoff at the Berlin Wall after an East German tank crossed the border to pursue a couple trying to escape. The USSR threatens nuclear war as a real considered option. All right, so you can kind of see where the timeline really starts to diverge in big ways, going over some of these dates. For one, women actually were on the moon and very involved in making discoveries on the moon in the alternate timeline. There are some different political changes that happened, partly because of the growing prominence of female professionals, female astronauts, and also the continued intensity of the Cold War. It didn't cool off like it did in the real timeline, where there was more collaboration in space, and there's areas where the USSR and the US were willing to come together. And also there's, differences in who is president that are interesting. So I'll let you consider that for a moment. We'll take a quick ad break and then we'll go into some analysis. All right, and we are back. So let's talk about if For All Mankind is a good example of alternate history, or if it's just Apollo 13 fan fiction, as Andrew Cunningham of Appointment Television argues. So some elements of the alternate timeline are better than the real world. For example, the Equal Rights Amendment passed, and there are women astronauts much earlier. The changes are also logical and based on factual information, as well as how people would respond to different situations. So, after the Soviets are the first to have a woman on the moon, President Richard Nixon wants a hot American lady to be on the moon. So, that seems pretty in character for him. They're not completely changing the script where everyone suddenly loves that women are professionals and going to space. There is a bit of resistance, and there's a specific image that they want to portray. So this demonstrates the amount of research that was completed by the writers, which should definitely be respected because they put a lot of time and energy into trying to make the show accurate and as detailed as possible. So some negative changes in the timeline is that the space race and Cold War at large are more tense for a longer period of time. The actions on the moon, specifically the construction of military bases, disregards the Outer Space Treaty of 1967, so that was pre the split in the timeline, which, while general and open to interpretation, prohibits the claiming of territory and the installation of military operations on the moon. And Chelsea Robertson talks about that on the Lunar Bases That Never Were episode of the For All Mankind official podcast. So this is obviously, like a creative license that the creators of the show took in order to have this escalating tension and real fears of, missiles being launched from the moon and all of these fears that Americans did have at the time and having those be realized. But there were some measures put in place in the real timeline to prevent it from ever escalating that far. Although, it is a treaty, so both parties have to agree and act accordingly for it to work. But anyways, because there are some pros and some cons to this new timeline, the show doesn't just exist to comfort viewers that we're in the correct timeline, which seems to be the purpose of a lot of World War II-based alternate histories. And just from my understanding of the genre, that seems to be a pretty dominant time period to have alternate histories, specifically where Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan are the victors of the war, and then what their control of different areas of the world looks like. And so that's very much to get people afraid of fascism, make people more grateful for the US winning the war, more appreciative for all the effort that took. But there's no upsides to those stories, from my understanding at least. Like, whereas here you can be like, oh, well, it's great that women made more progress, even if the nuclear buttons might be pushed. But anyways, going back to the show, the pacing of For All Mankind is very slow. So especially in the first two episodes, not a whole lot happens. It's mostly the main characters of astronauts reacting to the Soviets being first to land on the moon, and just them being very upset and worried about the future of the space program. In episode three, it starts to move in a more exciting direction with the addition of women astronaut candidates. But Again, the pacing is pretty slow for most of the show. Towards the end, it starts to pick up pace when there's all of these major developments, such as the lunar base. So you have to be pretty familiar with NASA history and the space race to really catch some of the minor points of divergence. And I'm definitely wasn't as familiar with NASA's history as I thought I was, because I had to do a lot of research after each episode to see, okay, how much of this really did happen and how much of it is changes. Because it does stay pretty like parallel with the real history for a long time, which is why even as the show starts to move into the 80s, like there's still touch points with the real timeline and similar years. It's not veering off into left field. It's staying pretty close. Even while there's some big changes, it still checks in with the real history. This has been noted by critics as well. Alan Siepenwall wrote in the Rolling Stone, quote, "But the show still seems torn between heading off in bold new directions and simply playing the NASA greatest hits, triumphant slow motion walks, anxious loved ones watching on TV, and so on. The show's reality grows more different from our own as time goes on, but at such a slowly escalating rate as to make the thought exercise behind it feel too abstract," unquote. So that's going back to this being more Apollo 13 fan fiction, because as the other critic, Liz Shannon Miller, noted, there is a real fear when you're watching it of these aren't based on real astronauts, these missions are different, there's a big possibility that these characters could die or something could go majorly wrong. And so, yeah, you still get to see the launches, you get to see all of, like, their walks on the moon, and the visuals and the special effects are incredible on this show. But it does definitely seem more interested in recreating that tension and creating scenarios in which you're not absolutely sure. Because if you were familiar with NASA history going into Apollo 13, sure, you would be nervous, you'd be a little anxious watching what happens. But you would be kind of comforted knowing they will make it back. I think that's kind of where that comparison comes from, is that there are definitely some episodes in particular where it seems like the creators of the show just want to give you that fear without any sort of like comfort or tie back to reality. They want you to be completely in the moment. And so Andrew Cunningham, as I mentioned, was the one who gave it this term of Apollo 13 fan fiction. And one of the things that he was frustrated about is that the musical landscape doesn't change in season two. They're all caught up in season two when they talk about the show in their episode. And the main thing that he wanted to see explored in the show was that John Lennon survives the 1980 assassination attempt. What would that mean for music going forward? Would he still be, you know, celebrated and be like a big figure? Or like what would happen in the musical landscape given the change of this event? And so he was kind of interested in seeing some kind of deep fake bands, like they did the deep fake presidential voices. And so that would certainly be interesting. And I agree with Andrew that the show is not very creative in imagining how popular culture and media would be different in the alternate world. So in the new timeline, they touch on the 1978 Oscars and the winners. Close Encounters of the Third Kind like sweeps the Oscars, and this alternate history, whereas it just got some like technical awards in the real timeline, which it's interesting that that would happen. But even with as much changes to NASA and the space race as they had happened in the timeline, why would it still be all of the same films being made? So I feel like they could have been more creative and having some new films and showing, oh, there were so many different entries of space films into the Oscars that were, you know, critically and commercially acclaimed. So I think that would have been more interesting than just kind of switching around who won and who was more celebrated. But that's me. I think the show is definitely interested, and it really shines through with the video timeline, because at the end of each segment, then they explain what the real history was and what their kind of process was for altering it while also making it realistic. So I think they're definitely interested in getting people excited and, you know, diving into the real history and just these different facets of life in the Cold War. So I think alternate history as a genre is important for critical thinking and not taking historical events for granted, and, you know, diving into the decision making and all of the people and different circumstances that made us go in a certain direction. So reading and viewing these stories encourages the audience to ask why events happened the way they did. For instance, why did we have space shuttles like we did in the 80s, especially? And why didn't we have sea dragons? Sea dragons were designed in the early 60s for you would use the equipment you would use to build ships and build them on the water and then have a water launch. That all sounds really cool. So why didn't they develop that idea further when they were trying to develop this more reusable commercial rocket in the late 70s? Why wouldn't they use the Sea Dragon? So it's something to think about and, you know, appreciate all of the things that people worked really hard on and put a lot of effort into, but were never realized. So one of the things that I appreciate from looking at alternate histories is that you get the understanding that rarely anything is predestined. Like, for example, there are some events where you would have to work really hard and make the point of divergence or actually earlier than just the outcome of the war in order to change the victors. For example, the Crimean War, if you're familiar with that at all, Russia just, they didn't have assembly line manufacturing. They were so behind on industrialization and having railroads and just different like military techniques and stuff. So there was no way that they were going to beat France and Britain and some of these Western powers. And so you would have to do a lot of work and go back further and change who the Tsar is, perhaps, in order to get going down the path that you want. Whereas there are some instances in history where it really could have gone either way. I think that's important to consider with alternate histories, but a lot of things aren't predestined. You go into it and you're not sure how it's going to go out. So it's important to keep that perspective that you have kind of living through your everyday life where you don't know what the election results are going to be and you don't know how certain events are going to be dealt with, and, you know, like, there is some anxiety, and you should take that perspective with you when you're looking at real history and reading about the accounts of people who lived through it and that they had no assurance of how things were going to end up either. But anyways, returning to the opening question, if you wrote or imagined an alternate history, what would be the point of divergence and why? So you can let me know via email. The email is warmingupod@gmail.com. Twitter, @warmingcoldwar, I'll post a tweet that will have that question in so you can just reply below that. Or in the comment section of my website, shelbyreidle.org. So that's shelbyreidle.org. And all the show notes will be up there. So if you want to look at some of the links, I'll also have a couple podcast recommendations. If you're interested in this topic at large, then you can continue to learn and investigate. Also, this is a bit of a new style of episode for me, so I'm eager to hear some feedback on it. And if you would like more pop culture episodes, there's a couple other alternate histories during the Cold War period that I could tackle if you're interested in that as well. But I'd like to thank you all for listening and continuing to support the show. This month, I would like to recognize new listeners from Russia and Nepal. If you like the show, please tell a friend and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Good Pods, and any other platforms. So until next time, have a great week.